Well, it's 28 minutes now to 9 the time. Time for your mediated conversation this morning. If you look at the two biggest problems facing us in the shorter term at the moment, the first is probably increasing food prices. The second, which of course is related, is rising fuel prices. A major cause of these problems is Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Ukraine and Russia together are major food exporters. Currently, millions of tons of grains and wheat are stuck in Ukrainian ports and cannot be released because of the Russian blockade. This has raised the price of food stuffs on international markets, which means that even though we are producing large amounts of food here, the prices that we pay, it seems to me, are still going to go up. And some of the predictions that we've seen around price increases could be dramatic. Last week, the company Tiger Brands warned that we could see food prices going up by 15%, an amount which is just incredible. I must tell you that I've seen other analysis that suggests that fruit, dairy, meat products are going to combine to bring down food prices and that they won't go up nearly as much as 15%. The other thing is that we don't know how long these prices will last. For example, it's entirely possible that farmers in other countries, including here, will start to produce the food which is currently grown in Ukraine, and so that within a few months prices will come down again. In fact, our farmers could even start to make some money because of the opportunities this presents. So then, how do these food price mechanisms work? What would drive these prices up? How long would they stay high for? Why would they come down again? I must just tell you, there's a contested area. You'll have different views being expressed. First this morning, you'll hear from Dr. Sifiso Ntombela, the chief economist at the Agricultural Marketing Council. Dr. Jane Battersby is a food researcher. She conducts research primarily within food markets in South Africa. And then the executive director of AgriSA is Christo van der Rede. We start then with Dr. Sifiso Ntombela. Dr. Ntombela, good morning and thanks for your time.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning to your listeners, and thank you for the invite.
What is moving the prices on international markets in this way? Why are prices going up so dramatically?
Stephen, I think we need to understand that even before the Russia-Ukraine, which of course, as you've in your own introduction remarks, you've correctly stated that it's one of the biggest producers, particularly in the grain commodities, but also in the fertilizers and the oilseed, which are main food items that that composite a very high weight on our typical food basket. But just before even the Russia-Ukraine started, the Russia invaded the Ukraine, you already had elevated prices across the world. And mainly some of those because the countries couldn't produce at the level that they were producing because of COVID and COVID-related issues or regulations, which also disturbed the international trade and the movement of goods at the time where we needed. But there were also this issue that we often talk about it, but not so much the impact that it's already making in our food system across the world, which is climate change. Some of the countries in parts in South America were having some difficulties in producing at the level that they usually produce, which impacted the supply internationally. Now, because the food system, including South Africa, we are connected into the global food system, we tend to, when the price is at the international level and the supply is not meeting up the demand, when the prices move up, we then precipitate that into the local market. Before, if I can just give you a sense, if you're looking at the FAO indexing of prices, they were already up by almost 1.141 points up, which are almost about 22% in comparison in the previous year, just before December of 2021. So the Russia-Ukraine then added on those issues because of the fertilizers, and we import more than 80% of our fertilizer use in South Africa. And all that cost then gets to be absorbed by the farmers as it becomes more expensive to produce the typical food that they have, and those costs then get to be translated into the consumer. But maybe one of the critical component. Remember, some of these, especially fuel and other areas, they affect your commodities, which is agricultural products. And what the consumer pay at the shelf is not necessarily only just the price of the agricultural commodity, which is maize or wheat. He pays the price of bread, which already takes into account other cost items such as fuel and diesel, which then get to be incorporated during the processing and the transportation of this food into the retailers. So the consumer actually pays a range of other costs that are basically, some of it are not necessarily incorporated within the agricultural sector.
Okay. Is there any way to protect South Africa from this? So some people listening to you might sort of say, We have farms. We're a food exporting country. We produce more than enough food for our people. So why should we be linked to these markets? Our farmers should sell what they produce to us at the price it costs them, and that would protect us from international prices. That obviously doesn't happen. I presume it doesn't happen for an important reason.
So certainly. And I think it's important to always say that why would we have to pay those prices? Because it changes. South Africa is not capable of producing all the commodities that it needs. Some of it are weather constrained. Like, for example, the palm oil, which we mainly use in our industrial cooking, or the rice, which we don't have the water and some of the environmental that it requires. So we have to depend on the national market. But I think especially one, if we're looking at it, Stephen, to say, what needs to be done, or how do you start helping the consumers to be able to not suffer these prices? And if you're looking at the broader definition of the food security, it has four components on it. It has the availability of food, which we are very comfortable as a country. We are capable of producing that. It has the issue of access, and we have a state of an art and well-connected food system through the businesses that they transport our food throughout every corner of the country. It has the component of safe and nutritious, which we produce quality food. The issue, which is the biggest issue, and it's a function also of the weaker economy, is the affordability of that food in the shelf, which is currently what the South Africans are really facing. Now, you have some of the issues of, say, how do you start helping the prices, not the consumer to pay so much of the prices? And one of the key areas, because we have almost 13 million people, 2.2 of those just started being unable to afford food during the COVID period. And how do you start repositioning some of the institutional market and creating some of the food labs that it can be able to assist those that cannot be able to afford food on budget? Food aid is one of the biggest institutional markets across the world, and South Africa probably is time to start looking at that market as part of the policy intervention of dealing with the food security, especially in the short term. Beyond that, we've seen some of the developing countries like South Africa, where they start considering strategic policies together with businesses and big industries in their countries of how do you start ensuring that those food that are critical, and we see there's a global shortages of them and the biggest prices increases, you start having programs that are able to increase the reserve within the country while you allow still the imports and the export of surplus of that food. Because what that does, it assists some of those countries to not experience exorbitant increases in terms of the food. And those mechanisms are in line with our international obligation in the WTO, are in line with the principles of market. So it's one of the areas we need to consider.
You would have seen the predictions of 15% increases for food price inflation to go up by 15%. Is that really possible?
I will say not necessarily, because we are expecting very good crop in most of the commodities that we produce. Even in sunflower, which was one of the biggest ones, we're expecting a really good crop, over 1 million tons that is starting in the summer season, including our major support. What I can say, Stephen, is that perhaps if we're just looking at our supply that is coming up during our harvest, we could say perhaps in 3 months' time, we'll have sufficient quantities that will start moving the prices down. But if we start looking at other economic constraints that we are facing in the country, which is the rising fuel, if the fuel continues to rise as it is, and the outages on electricity, which tend to force the processors and farmers to switch from the electricity to diesel, which add also on the cost, then we are unlikely to start seeing prices going even beyond what we have, even at the back of the big crop that we are expecting in the country. So those are the dynamics that we have to follow closely. And if we don't find solutions closer to it, we are likely to see those prices then going beyond even 15%.
Sure. For the moment, the short-term spike in prices is because food producers were expecting to get the crops grown in Ukraine. In other words, the crops had been grown. They expected those crops to be delivered. Now, those crops are not being delivered. But farmers in other countries will try and grow those crops now. So is it possible to predict what will happen to prices over, say, the next 2 to 3 years? I suppose I'm really asking is how long will prices stay very high for before other farmers, including ours, take over?
So it is possible. And one of the challenges is that to be able to just plant some of the commodities that was grown in Ukraine, in other countries, It takes R&D to domesticate some of those cultivars into the climate of the different countries. So it doesn't become really a very short-term intervention that you can easily do. To give you an example, we import a lot of wheat, and we shifted from Russia, and we started producing this year. We imported a lot of that wheat from Australia, Argentina, and other countries. We have the capabilities of producing that wheat, but it will take a very strong and dedicated and well-funded research and development to be able to move beyond the areas of the Western Cape and central part of the country, such as your Free State, into areas that are showing potential in the Eastern Cape and other areas, where we can be able to produce that wheat if we want to be one of the countries who become self-sufficient. So basically what I'm saying to you, Stephen, is that it might not be a very plausible solution in the short term to just switch and start producing this food that you have, because there are a lot of other factors on it. But usually what we tend to see, like in South Africa, we tend to see a lag factor of about 3 months where we start seeing if there's a relief in terms of the raw material that's coming in into the market. And in 3 months' time or 2 months' time, depending on the commodity, you start seeing consumers starting to have a relief in terms of pressure. Equally so as well, when you have a lot of shortages, the prices start being much higher in the 2 to 3 months. But that depends on the commodities. In very perishable such as vegetables or your potatoes or your onions and stuff, that period is even much shorter. It can be even a couple of weeks in between the two. So that's a time frame we are looking at those adjustments where the farmers, or sorry, where the consumers can start seeing changes in their shelf prices.
Dr. Sifiso Ntombela, thank you very much indeed. Chief Economist at the Agricultural Marketing Council. You with SAFM, 16 minutes now to 9. The immediate conversation around rising food prices continues. Dr. Jane Battersby is a food researcher who has particular interest in food markets and pricing. Dr. Battersby, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Morning, Stephen, and morning to the listeners.
So when these increases happen on international food markets, what happens to food prices here? How are those increases transmitted through the food supply markets in our countries?
Yeah, so we often see kind of a short lag, as Dr. Ntombela was saying. So, you know, recently, even before the crisis, we saw prices increasing linked to the global food price index. So we're seeing this process as a long-term and a short-term challenge. And our local producers are profoundly impacted by what happens at the global. It's around the global markets, which we're dependent on, but it's also upon other factors like the access to fertilizers and global uncertainty.
Does it happen immediately, or does it take a few months, or is it difficult to say?
It really depends on the kinds of products we're thinking about. So if you're looking at products which are dependent on a large number of imports and also products that have kind of rapid production cycles. So if you think about something like bread, where we are dependent on wheat imports and there's these kind of daily production cycles, we'll often see the price transmission really happening quite fast. And I think that's one of the things that we're seeing now. I think the other aspect about why we see prices jumping is not simply about kind of what's happening in the moment, but the long-term uncertainties that are developing. So we've already heard about the kind of price of fertilizers, and you know, one of the largest exporter of fertilizers is Russia and Belarus, which is obviously going to impact what happens in terms of food production elsewhere in the world. We're seeing food export bans as other countries start to panic. So we've seen India banning the export of wheat, Indonesia banning the export of palm oil, and all these kinds of uncertainties then fuel food price increases.
I would imagine the people who feel the pressure first in South Africa are the food production companies, the processors. I'm talking about Tiger Brands, Pioneer Foods, Rhodes, companies like that. Is that where prices start to move up first? They feel the price of their inputs going up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've also got to recognize that it's not simply about the price of the inputs. So as Dr. Ntombela was talking about, the price of fuel and how that impacts along the supply chain, but also we're seeing a supply chain crisis in terms of things like packaging and canning, and those are also driving up the food prices. So I think they're observing quite a lot of the costs into that process and are passing those along to the consumers.
With all of this, it seems to me that the price of bread may have been relatively stable for a long time, although it may depend on where you are. So I know of at least one supermarket in the Joburg area where you can get a loaf of brown bread or a loaf of white bread unsliced for R9.99. I mean, is that kind of price for a loaf of bread incredibly unusual, or is the price of bread actually going up dramatically?
Yeah, so actually most of the supermarkets do have a bread subsidy program. So they will subsidize the in-store bakery bread. Oftentimes they'll only produce quite a small number of loaves per day, but they certainly do that, partly as a social responsiveness program, but partly as a loss leader. But we are seeing generally the price of bread going up quite dramatically. So yesterday's results from the Pietermaritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Project found that there's been a 10% year-on-year increase in the price of both white and brown bread. So the bread prices are going up, and I think we're going to see that increasing quite dramatically.
Sure. During the hard lockdown, one of the things we learned about the way that our food markets work was the importance of competition. So people shop around. People don't just go to one of the big supermarkets. They'll often go to, say, three or four of the major supermarket chains on one Saturday morning to get the best deals. And the Spaza shop market plays a huge role in the food chain as well, particularly for fresh foods, I understand. Are they all going to feel the same increase? Or will that effect of competition keep some prices low for a while? In other words, different companies will make different decisions about what to keep the price down on, and that means that people will have to shop around more to try and alleviate the increases that they feel.
Absolutely. So one of the things we found in our research is just how important those brochures that come in your postbox, when nothing else comes in the postbox, the specials from the supermarkets and the specials from the spazas, and how important they are in people's decision-making processes about what they're going to purchase. There are kind of certain products that are discounted at different retailers at different times. However, I think that the margins are getting really tight. And I think people have been really pushed to their limits of bargain hunting. And I don't see there's that much more slack. And the concern is, you know, we're seeing the World Bank saying that they're anticipating we're going to see food price increases until 2024. And I'm just not sure how much residual slack people have and how much capacity the different retailers have to continue to lower prices. I think the one area where there is potential is certainly in fresh produce and fresh produce traders who are able to sell fresh produce at discounted prices through going through the municipal markets. I think that's one area. But we've also got to recognize that people's choices are then constrained by what they can actually afford to cook. Because obviously with fuel prices increasing and electricity prices increasing and electricity being unreliable, it adds to the cost of consumption. And so the choice envelope that people have is really quite narrow.
Sure. Dr. Jane Battersby, thank you very much indeed. A food researcher, as you can hear, quite a sort of stark picture being painted there. In a moment, Christo van der Reede, the Executive Director at AgriSA, representing farmers. 10 minutes now to 9.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
Continuing your mediated conversation around food prices, Christo van der Reede is the Executive Director of AgriSA. Christo, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, and good morning to all of your listeners.
When food prices go up as we expect them to, does that mean that our agricultural sector, our farmers, make more money?
Not necessarily. Remember, farmers face quite a lot of obstacles at this point in time. And we're really worried that farmers will reach a point where they will decide that does it make business sense to continue, or should they rather climb out and wait until circumstances change for the better. But I want to focus on the positive side this morning. Our summer crop harvests are looking very good at this point in time. We have a bumper crop again in terms of maize, approximately 14.7 million tons, equally split between white maize and yellow maize. Our soya beans crop sits at 1.9 million tons, sunflower at almost a million tons, and then groundnuts and all of the other products are also up in the region of 7%. So in terms of food availability, we don't have a problem as South Africa. We have enough food. The dilemma that we face is that our products, especially our grains, domestic grains and oilseeds, follow the global market price fluctuations. And this poses a problem, obviously, for our consumers, because that has an impact on price increases. And we've seen some of our products increase over time. But we are still in a very fortunate position. If you look at our inflation rate, if you compare that with the U.S., our inflation rate, food inflation rate sits at 6.4%. In the U.S., sits at almost 8%. Kenya, almost 9%, Brazil 9%, Zambia 16%. So yes, thankfully for the resilience of our farmers, I think we're still in a very fortunate position, but we should not take it for granted because there are certain factors that place the profitability of farmers under tremendous pressure, and that is a big worry for us.
I mean, fuel's obviously a problem, electricity's a problem, all of these things are problems for you. The price of fertilizer is a big input. Ukraine is a huge food producer for the world. It can produce some crops more cheaply than we have been able to. But now it's no longer going to be producing that food, or it cannot confirm delivery of that food. So is there a gap in the market for our farmers? Are they going to grow some of the crops that Ukraine used to dominate in?
Indeed. Remember, we've had a bit of a crop damage during December, especially in the Free State area where some of our maize were flooded. That has obviously impacted on the maize crop. So those farmers are now planting wheat to make up for the shortfall that we're currently experiencing. Hopefully, our farmers in the Western Cape will also expand the wheat production and the possibility of planting wheat in provinces such as the Eastern Cape, where we sit with huge amounts of communal land that is just lying idle. I think that must be that's a massive opportunity, especially for our emerging farmers. But in order for us to do that, there's a number of things that must happen. One, government must look at increasing the diesel rebate. Remember, our farmers get very little production support. A different word for production support is subsidies. American counterparts, European counterparts, Chinese counterparts, Brazilian counterparts, they all are supported by the government. So what we are saying is, yes, on the one hand, we have reduced the fuel levy to make it easier for consumers to survive. But on the other hand, farmers play a critical role in terms of food production. Let us ease the burden in terms of the cost of diesel by increasing the diesel rebate so that the farmers can expand production at this point in time. There's a basic economic principle that we must keep our eye on, the principle of supply and demand. If we increase our supplies, then obviously that will have an impact, and hopefully so, on the price that consumers pay at the end of the day. But if the supplies dwindles and the demand shoots up, it is going to lead to increase in food inflation, increase in prices, which at the end of the day will make it very difficult for our consumers to survive out there. And I think this is where government, together with the industry, have to sit around the table and do the proper forecast, put the proper interventions in place. But remember, it's not just monetary interventions. It's also government has a role to fulfill in terms of making sure our infrastructure works. Our roads, especially our rural roads, are in a serious dilapidated state. Those roads are important for farmers to bring their food to markets and bring input supplies back to the farms. Farmers currently spend a lot of money in maintaining those roads themselves. They spend a lot of money in fixing their vehicles, and at the end of the day, it's the poor consumer, on the other hand, who then have to make up for all of those additional costs. It also applies to our rail system. It also applies to our harbors, and it also applies to other factors that impact on food production, such as farm safety and so forth. If there's one thing that we should prioritize at this point in time is to ensure food availability, food affordability, and at the same time, making sure that we do not compromise that in any way, because if we do so, it might lead to further social instability in the country.
I do want to ask you, we've got just 30 seconds left. Krista, you want to focus on the positive, so do I. Is this an opportunity perhaps to grow our agricultural sector and employ more people?
Yes, we've seen the figures that were released yesterday that the farming sector is one of the few sectors that have seen an increase in job opportunities. And that for us is very, very good. But remember, we must make sure that we sustain and grow those levels of employment opportunities. If we, however, make the cost of labor too high, then farmers tend to mechanize. And that's always the choice that farmers face. Obviously, in South Africa, we are highly conscious about our responsibility towards our communities out there. And we don't want to go that route. We want to employ as many people as possible, whether it's on a permanent basis or on a seasonal basis. And we want to play a role, especially in our rural towns, where we create a lot of other value-added entrepreneurial opportunities. But for that to happen, we need to have our municipalities delivering the necessary services and so forth. And yes, agriculture is is positioned to deliver on job creation and so forth.
Christoffer de Reda, thank you, Executive Director at AgriSA. I do appreciate the time. My thanks also to Dr. Jane Battersby, the food researcher, starting us off, the Chief Economist at the Agricultural Marketing Council, Dr. Sifiso Ntombela. Well, that is your Mediator Conversation this morning.